Hello, knitters. Stacy here. To celebrate 1 year of podcasting, we are re-releasing 2 weeks of classic episodes. This little break will also allow Casey to spend some quality summer fun time with her boys while they're out of school. Hey, Casey, you have some fun stuff planned?
Sure. We've already been doing all kinds of stuff.
Good, good. This week's episode is Casey's interview with psychologist, author, and podcaster Art Markman. He talks about process versus project knitters, multitask knitting, and other topics. This is definitely one of my favorite episodes. You too, Casey?
Me too, for sure.
Yeah, this is such a great one. Anyway, enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hello.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the podcast, just email it to podcast@verypink.com. This is episode 26, and as always, we will put links to everything we talk about in the show in the show notes, and you can access those by going to verypink.com and clicking the podcast tab at the top of the page for all of the show notes. And this week we have a sponsor, and it is The Woolery. So listen through to the end of the podcast for news from The Woolery. And Casey, how are you doing?
Good.
You did something kind of exciting.
I did.
This segment that you put together.
I did. But before we get to that, I wanted to point out the show notes from last week, too, if people were curious about the strange sounding birds in the beginning.
Because okay.
I think grackles sound very strange. And so we put an article in there about the grackles, which is kind of entertaining if anybody's interested in birds.
Okay. The Do Chickens Wear Sweaters episode.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you're thinking that people are going to hear... who have listened to that will think grackles sound weird.
Yes.
They just sound like birds to me.
I think they sound like laser beams or something. I don't know. They're weird.
Okay.
They're very interesting. They're very controversial birds.
They are controversial. Yes, they are. Because people don't like them here. Okay. So, but the link to that article is in the show notes for last week.
Yes.
And this week we have a segment. You went on the road again with the mobile equipment and interviewed Art Markman.
Yep.
And, I want to hear more about him, but I want to say he does a podcast called Two Guys on Your Head. You introduced me to this podcast a few months ago and I listen to it every week. Tell us more about him.
Yeah. He's a professor at UT, and I met him through one of the classes they do through the Human Dimensions of Organizations program. And so he just makes psychology very obtainable for
totally accessible
people.
And interesting. Yeah. And their podcast, something that I admire is that it's just under 10 minutes every week. And so it's this little chunk of something to learn about your brain.
Yeah. And so I had written about it on my blog because we had been talking about process versus project. And then they had an episode about that in terms of work. And there's a theory of psychology about that. It's something to do with a treadmill. And so that's why I was like, oh, hey, we can apply this to our podcast.
You and I would listen to the podcast. And that same day, we were both asking each other, did you listen to the podcast?
Right.
Before we get into that, let's talk about what this is when we're talking about process knitters versus project knitters. Mm-hmm. And people who have listened to the podcast for a while know that we are on opposite sides of the fence here. I am a process knitter, meaning I like knitting for the sake of knitting. And if I was to only have one ball of yarn to knit for the rest of my life, I would actually probably be okay just ripping out and Sisyphus knitting the same ball of yarn over and over again. You, Casey, are a project knitter, which means that you want to get this project over with and get on to the next one.
Right.
Like the finished thing is your goal.
Right.
And we've talked about this in the podcast several times, just anecdotally between the two of us and our experiences with that. But actually listening to an expert on what's going on with our brains, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say before we get into the clip?
No, we can talk about it after, perhaps, because it'll make more sense after.
Yes. Okay, let's do it.
Okay.
I'm Art Markman, professor of psychology at the University of Texas, the director of a program called the Human Dimensions of Organization. So we try to teach people in the business world about people, and co-host of a podcast produced out of KUT Radio in Austin called Two Guys on Your Head.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that podcast in the past on our show. Okay. So the big reason why I came to talk to you is one of the topics that we had heard, and Stacy and I have talked about process versus project. And so in terms of knitting, we have people who just enjoy the project, and it doesn't matter if it ever, no, they enjoy the process. It doesn't matter if it ever finishes. If they mess up, they tear it out and start over again. And then there's people like me who wants to finish that thing or starts a project because you want that thing. So talk to us a little bit about that in terms of a hobby. I mean, I know in your podcast you talked about it for work related, but does it apply in the same place?
Sure. So, just to make sure we're clear on the distinction, right? So, someone who's engaged, who's focused on the process and enjoys the process, just enjoys doing the thing itself without really paying much attention to have I finished something? Am I starting something? How do I feel about the current project? And the project-based people are really focused on, I've got this thing I got to do. I'm motivated to complete that, and my happiness with the end result is related to whether I like the thing itself. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, they have different impacts on both your motivation and your feelings about the hobby all along. So I think that process-based folks, if you really enjoy the thing you're doing, then you spend a lot of time just enjoying the moments, even if you're at the front end of a project or in the middle of a project, or even if the thing isn't going as well as you wanted it to. It's the problem solving that goes with it. It's the just the time itself spent. All of that creates that enjoyment. So I think the enjoyment levels are a little bit more even for those folks, and probably if you averaged it out, maybe a little higher overall. I think when you're project-based, you're often really motivated at the beginning of a project because you're excited to get it started, and you're really motivated at the end of the project because it's almost done. And if there are subtasks in the middle, that can be motivating too. So if there's a particular part of a pattern or something that you're trying to master, that can be an exciting piece. But there's a chewy middle part of these kinds of projects that's just a slog. And that can become even more of a slog if, as you evaluate how things are going, you get the sense that it's not quite going as well as you'd like it to. Then you may begin to feel like, well, this whole project's a waste, and you can see people getting frustrated and you know, ripping up what they've done. And so I think that the interesting thing about being a project-based person is I think the highs are higher, the lows are lower, and probably overall, it's hard to be as satisfied on any given day to work on something.
That's interesting, because one of the things that has come up is I have like 8 projects going on at a time, and my friend Stacy, who she's very process motivated, she has 2. Yeah. And she has one that's an easy project and one that's a hard project, and she finishes it and goes on to the next one. Yeah. And then I like to start a new project every time I turn around. That's really interesting. And then one of the other things I wanted to ask you about was in your book, Brain Briefs, I got that book, and you talk about brain games and as your brain ages. So is knitting something that we can consider a good thing for our brains, or should we be looking for harder projects and challenging ourselves in different ways?
Yeah. We talk in the book a little bit about brain games, and we're not a fan of brain games, and actually the evidence sits with us on that. You play brain games, you get better at the brain game, but you don't necessarily get, your brain doesn't necessarily improve in some general way. So we recommend that you do something else. And knitting can be a great activity in a few ways. One of the things that people forget is that your brain is actually there to move your body around. And of course, there's lots of ways of moving your body around. One way is to get up and walk around. But the kind of fine motor control that you need to really do a credible job of knitting is also engaging the brain in the activity of getting your body moving along. And so I think that's really valuable. And then on top of that, you know, to the extent that you challenge yourself to try something new every once in a while, it doesn't have to be every single day, but if you challenge yourself to try something new, that requires some thought as well, because, you know, the instructions you get never work quite perfectly. And so you have to do a little bit of problem solving. And also that challenging yourself creates this other piece that's important, which is the social element. So knitting is something that you can do anywhere and by yourself if you want to. But when you challenge yourself to do something and it doesn't go well, then chances are you've got your knitting buddies where you've got people that you can call for help to say, okay, this didn't work at all and I can't figure out what to do. Help me out. And that enforced social interaction is also actually really good for your brain. So I think there's a lot of elements to knitting or frankly any hobby that can actually enhance the brain forever. And one of the nice things about knitting is, as I remember fondly back to my grandma, who was, you know, a world champion yarn person. She worked at Bamberger's, which was the precursor to Macy's in New Jersey. She was in the yarn department. I mean, from her, you know, 30s and 40s, and was constantly making stuff. But when she was able to retire, then she kind of went into high gear. And one of her last big projects in her life was to make an Afghan for every single grandchild that she had. I still have mine somewhere fondly. So yeah, it does. And every single one was different. Yeah. I mean, that was her challenge. It wasn't just to make one. It was to make something really different for everybody.
Nice. So one of the other things we were talking about, and I guess it kind of goes to the aging brain, is, or maybe it's more of a tactile thing. So some people knit during presentations or during class, maybe, or is there any kind of psychology to having your hands do? And I know you've talked about that, to be able to occupy your hands and things. So are we actively listening when we're doing that, or are we not actively listening, or how does that work?
So as with every great psychology question, the answer is it depends. Right. And what it depends on is essentially how consuming the knitting task is. So if what you do is something that's just familiar, so you don't really have to pay that much attention to the knitting task itself, you're not doing anything terribly complicated that requires a lot of counting and other things, then actually knitting can enhance your attention in the same way that there's evidence that doodling will enhance your attention. So you can, you know, there are doodlers who will just kind of draw absent-minded things as they're listening, and that doodling can actually increase attention because it occupies this energy in your body that you would otherwise might distract you. Now, the problem with any knitting task, of course, is that if it verges into something that's a little bit more complicated and suddenly you find yourself paying attention to the knitting, well, now it's not helping you to pay attention anymore. And so you don't want to pick the brand new difficult project to bring to the lecture. But yeah, I think it actually can be really helpful.
That was so good, Casey.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I wish I could have made it. I'll be totally honest in saying that I was supposed to be there too, but it was raining.
Really crazy rain.
And I'm afraid to drive in the rain. And I was just in a car accident a few weeks ago where someone crashed into me. So thank you for doing that on your own.
It was fun.
I really wanted to meet him though, because like I'm a fan of his podcast.
Yeah. He's a cool guy.
Yeah, really? Yeah, seems like it. Well, maybe we'll get to talk to him again sometime when it's sunny outside. Maybe.
It's funny. I've been thinking about a lot of the stuff that he says, and I think it's really interesting, and especially the part about your brain is meant to use your fingers and move your fingers is something that we had not seen much before.
No, I'd never heard that before, and it's really interesting in the way that knitting is unlike a brain game that way, you know, like mm-hmm. a computer brain game, because you're actually, like you said, propelling your body to do something. Mm-hmm. Even if you're sitting down while you're doing it, your mm-hmm. brain's controlling your body and you're moving. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
He makes me feel good about being a knitter.
Yeah.
A process knitter. There's no okay. right or wrong.
I'm okay with my highs are high in my project knitting world.
That's right. It's a roller coaster for you.
Yeah, I was just saying my whole life is a project. My other job is a project job.
Right.
You know.
It works.
It's okay.
It works. Okay, are we going to magically turn knitting questions into knitting answers today?
We are.
Okay.
Are you ready? Okay.
Yep.
Hello, Stacey and Casey. I was wondering if you could explain to me how to block properly wet and steam, especially things like coats, sweaters, and mittens. I cannot do them no matter how hard I try. They always end up looking wrong or a different shape. I've been able to do some blankets and scarves. Thank you very much. Love the podcast. P.S. Would you consider making a from sink to board blocking video? Thanks again. Kayla from Oregon.
Hi, Kayla. I do have a few videos on blocking, different kinds of blocking, and one photo tutorial on wet blocking. I don't understand what's happening that you say you've tried to block different things and none of them come out shaped properly. I'm thinking the only way that could happen is if you're wet blocking. Let me just back up here a little bit, but blocking is the last thing that we do after we finish knitting something. Wet blocking is when we actually wash the thing and then we set it out flat to dry. Or steam blocking is a way of just applying some steam and patting it out to even out the stitches so we can see how the size of something is turning out, or you know, how it looks, how it's going to look when it's finished. I'm thinking the only way that something could turn out to be shaped dramatically differently than the final project is if you're pulling it out of the sink or whatever really wet, squeezing out the excess water, and then setting it out flat to dry while it's still really, really wet. I would think that would, like, the weight of it would make it not look smooth and flat. Mm-hmm. So the thing that we do after we pull it out of the sink and squeeze out the excess water is you put a towel on the floor, throw the wet thing on the towel, roll it up like a burrito, and then step all over it. And that squishes a lot of the extra water out so you're actually able to work with it. Or the other option is to put it in, if you have a top loading washer, you can put it in the washer on spin cycle and spin a lot of the extra water out that way. And then you have something that's wet, but leaning more towards damp than sopping and probably easier to shape. What do you think, Casey?
Yeah, I couldn't think. I can't think of any other reason why it would not, unless she's pulling it too far.
Well, that's the thing. You have the schematic in your pattern and you just set it out flat to dry according to the schematic. The other thing is every piece that you've mentioned here is double-sided, like a sweater. It has a front and a back and mittens. And what was the other thing she said?
Coats.
So another trick when you're blocking those items is to let them dry on one side and then flip them over so they dry on the other side. And if you have a ceiling fan in your house, it's a good idea to put it in a room under the ceiling fan. That really helps with the drying time. Kayla, I don't think I understand why you're only able to block things out square. Maybe we can hear more from you and let us know exactly what's happening. Or maybe try using 100% wool yarn on mittens or something on a small project and see if that helps. Because it might be because you're using cotton or acrylic or something. It's hard to say. I'm not sure. It's a problem, of course. We want to try to help you, Kayla. So maybe you want to write us back and let us know more specifically what's going on there.
Okay.
Okay.
Next question. Hi, Stacey and Casey. Ian from Glasgow, Scotland. Or do they say Ian in Scotland?
I don't know, but I think it's Glasgow.
Glasgow. Sorry. I was so concerned about his name.
Well, in the U.S., we say Ian.
They say Ian in the U.K., right?
Your sons both have
Irish names.
Irish names, Scottish names. Mm-hmm. Are they Irish? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not helping with the Scottish pronunciation, is it? Sorry. Okay.
And we say it wrong anyway.
Well, yeah.
Cormac. It should be Cormac.
Okay.
but we say Cormac.
You say Cormac.
It's Texas.
Right. It's a nice name. I don't know about the Ian question, but you know anyway. What I bet? I bet he knows we're talking about him.
Yeah.
But he recognizes his name.
Anyway, just started work today on toe-up GSR socks and have spent the evening picking out the stitches from the provisional cast-on and knitting the first subsequent row. Work was way too tight. I know this is only twice per pair of socks, but found the whole process unenjoyable. Fortunately, I managed not to drop or create stitches, and the sock looks amazing. I also have your pattern for wrap and turn bulky socks, which also involves provisional cast on. Is there any way to get around the provisional cast on, or is it just a question of practice makes less imperfect? Kind regards.
Practice makes less imperfect. Hi, Ian. Thank you for that. I think I can probably help you a bunch with whatever's going on here. I recommend using a bigger crochet hook and thicker yarn. It sounds like your crochet chain might have been kind of tight. It shouldn't be difficult. You can see in the video that it's kind of an easy thing to pick up the stitches or to cast right onto the knitting needle, and then picking it back out shouldn't be a nightmare. So bigger crochet hook, thicker yarn for your provisional cast on. Give it a try. You can even just give it a try, just the cast on, and knit a couple of rows and then try pulling it out and not going through the whole process of the toe of a sock to make sure it's better. You can just try it like that too to see if it makes any improvement.
I just did that on a hat, and I think you reminded me, because we had an email question about it, that you need to make sure to pull from the non-starting end.
Right. In all my videos, I have everyone make a knot in the yarn on the slip knot end, and you unzip from the non-slip knot end.
Yes, because I did it backwards because I wasn't...
It doesn't unravel.
And it doesn't, and no. It's a big pain. And I was like, what is going on? And then I remembered.
Yeah. So makes a big difference. Thank you for that, Ian. I hope that helps you out.
Okay. Hi, Stacy. I love your videos and the podcast. I listen at work and can't wait to get home and get back to my projects because I'm so inspired. My question
That's
is this.
Nice.
How would I go about stitching from English knitting to Portuguese knitting in the middle of a project? I'm working a shawl and garter stitch, and I don't know if I should start with a purl row or a knit row. Help. Thank you, Rachel from Berkeley, California.
Hi, Rachel. I don't recommend changing your knitting style in the middle of a project. The chances that you're going to change, your gauge is going to change a little bit, making the project look really different at the spot where you changed your knitting style. Stick with one style for this project and then pick up with the other style on the next project is my advice. But as far as switching between knitting Portuguese style, you want, did she say it was garter stitch?
I don't think she said.
She did say shawl in garter stitch.
Oh.
So you're going to be on the wrong side of the work. You still want to knit every row, and it's changing to purl every row. I see what she's saying, because now I'm actually got myself caught in a brain teaser. Portuguese knitting, you purl every row because it's easier. And continental knitting, you're going to knit every row because it's easier. She wants to switch to Portuguese in the middle of a garter stitch scarf. So she's going to be on the wrong side of the work. She's going to have to turn to the right side of the work and purl.
Okay.
For a wrong side of the work. Yeah. But it doesn't even matter. I don't know why I'm answering it, because she shouldn't switch in the middle of a project. It'll show.
It's hurting your brain. Okay. Hi, girls. I like that she thinks we're girls.
That's nice. We are girls. We'll always be girls, but I don't know. I get called ma'am more than girl.
I am enjoying your podcast enormously. In episode 9, you talked a bit about the Knit Companion app. From what I could gather at their website, it is for patterns they sell. Do you know of any way to download a pattern chart you have written yourself? I know all the advanced features would not be available, but I would love the simple way of keeping your place in a chart. Hope you can help, or else I will have to grovel before my brother, the computer geek, to see if he can design something. Sandra from Chicago. P.S. Can I give a shout out to my fabulous knitting group, Knit Nirvana? Hey, girls, look, I'm on the radio.
She calls everybody girls.
I know.
Okay, Sandra. First of all, Knit Companion, you could use any patterns. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that they sell patterns.
They do.
They do?
Yeah, there's a library that they have, and you can get patterns from them.
Okay, but you can... Wait, I know that I'm trying to answer a question. I think you have the better answer for it, because we talked about this.
Yeah.
There's something, the way that it links with Ravelry.
Yeah, so that's a new feature. When I first got it, you can have a Dropbox connection. So if you have Dropbox and you can
have
your own files in a folder, and that's what I usually do, because when I first got it, some things you could scan, I scanned patterns out of a book. You just have to turn it into PDF form. And so then you have to put it in a Dropbox, and then you can pull it from Dropbox. I don't know if there's any other file sharing places.
So are you using Knit Companion regularly?
I am. I started using it again.
Okay. I didn't know you were. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did for a while, and then I stopped, and then it's really good for charts.
Right. That's how my friend Steven uses it. You line up the chart just right, and it
counts the rows for you, and you can like put little notes in it. So I use it for what I'm doing, and I've been doing charted projects lately. And then now it links to your Ravelry library. So if you've downloaded something into your library on Ravelry, it'll pull from there.
Or if you've bought a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I just recently got a free pattern from Ravelry, put it in my library, and then I'm on the app. I can go and download it there.
Well, you know what else is cool about that is that there isn't a Ravelry app yet. Mm-hmm. And this, the fact that you can access your library through the Knit Companion app.
It's really cool.
That is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
What device do you use when you're using the Knit Companion app?
My iPad.
Okay. So you have a big screen to look at while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. How would it work on a smaller screen?
I don't know.
If someone were to do it on their phone?
I guess you could do it on your phone. Seems like it would be hard because it'd be small.
Yeah.
Because I like to really zoom in.
For a big chart.
So I can look at my chart.
You know, that's another thing is I've had people asking me about what to do when a chart is really small. That's a good answer, isn't it? Okay.
Super cool.
Well, I need to check it out again. It's been years since I've looked at the Knit Companion app, and every now and then I get questions about it. Yeah.
It's because if you're working from a chart, you've got it saved. Because I've always had, like, I've used those magnet boards before, and sometimes things get moved, and so you can't really tell which row you're on. So it's cool.
As long as you have, as long as you're charged up.
Right.
But now,
so I can watch, like I've been watching Hulu, I can make that small and have screen in the screen. So my chart is on there and I can be watching a show at the same time.
With your chart open.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just going to say that I watch TV and I print out my charts. And so I don't have a problem with screen in the screen. But I do want to check out Knit Companion again. It's maybe come a long way since I looked at it like 4 years ago or something.
And because the setup used to be kind of clunky and it would take a while, but now they kind of instantly set it up for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think the setup, I remember that part.
Yeah.
Yes. I think we have time for one more question.
Okay. Hi, Stacy and Casey. My question is about stitch gauge. Do you knit a swatch and take the gauge then or after washing and drying the swatch? Love the podcast and videos. Wish the podcast was longer. Pat from Frisco, Colorado. I've been there.
You've been to Frisco, Colorado?
My parents used to have a place there.
Well, we need to thank Pat for having an easy first name. Maybe she does.
I'll have to ask.
Pat has an easy name and an easy place to pronounce.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Thank you for that, Pat. Regarding swatching and checking your gauge, you do want to wash and block the swatch before you measure gauge. The reason that you want to do that is because eventually, if you're knitting a garment, a hat or a sweater or whatever, you're going to want to wash the hat when it's finished, and you want to know how the yarn's going to behave when it gets wet. And that's why we wash and block the scarf. That was an easy one to answer, wasn't it?
Yes. Go
ahead.
This, I think, comes up in another question. Do you measure it first and then after to see what the difference is?
I always do. I always do. It's not that important. I mean, what happens afterwards is what's really important. But yeah, I always measure both.
Well, because you're measuring as you go, if it's grown an inch. If you're measuring as you go before you change to some other part of the pattern, it's good to know that it's going to stretch.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. That gets more into row gauge.
Right.
Not stitch gauge so
but
much.
But still, like if it says knit for 13 inches.
Yeah, that's row gauge.
Yeah.
Okay, let me get into the sponsor here. Our sponsor this week is The Woolery. The Woolery hosts 12 Fiber Toys of Christmas. Sign on to their newsletter at woolery.com to receive notifications, including upcoming offers from Strouch, our favorite manufacturer for ball winders, and Swifts. Now, I'm reading this, but I really use the Strouch ball winder and Swift. That's really my choice. I can see in my office from here and I see them set up. They are awesome. And if you still have a chance to get something on your Christmas wish list, that is a great gift for a knitter. I haven't finished reading the copy yet. Don't forget, gift certificates make great instant stocking stuffers for that Strouch ball, winder, and swift you're wanting. I don't know how that works. You buy yourself a gift certificate. You just tell someone you want the gift certificate. How do you hint that you want a ball, winder, and swift, and a very specific one?
Well, if you're like my family or my in-laws, they just send each other links to what they want.
Do they see that's...
I don't like that.
Well, that's... Okay. How would you be sneaky about it then? Okay, let's say I want a Strouch ball winder and swift. What do I do?
You go to the website and you put the link in your email and say, this is what I want.
No, what if I want to do it sneakier than your in-laws?
Oh. Find a picture of it and leave it with a note
find
for Santa.
Print it. Go to the website. Go to thewoolery.com. Print it out. And then take a big red pen and draw hearts all over. I love this. I love this. I love this. Santa, please, please.
Mail it to your house, address to Santa.
Whatever you have to do. Anyway, if you go to the show notes, there will be a link to the Woolery and the 12 fiber toys of Christmas, as well as the ball winder and swift that I swear by, that I love by them. And I think that's all that we have for this week. Mm-hmm. Casey, if people want to find you online, what do they do?
My website is kcknits.com, and that's the letter K and the letter C.
Okay. And if you want to find me online, you can go, of course, to my YouTube channel, Very Pink Knits. There's also verypink.com. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, all of my social media buttons are there for Ravelry and Facebook and everything else. So that's all we have for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.